How's it going there, all you slashers and survivor girls? It's your good buddy Lunchbox and Mistress Meg here. And Meg, you had a little thought on your way to work during your little commute on your long drive. What was your thought there?
When you got a 30-minute commute, the mind has a chance to wander.
Mine does that on a...
You do that while pooping.
Yeah. Anytime. Eating, taking care of my kids. It's just down that old dusty trail.
So I had a thought today about doing this Creepin' It Quickie about horror movie soundtracks. And the reason why is because I love them.
Who doesn't?
Particularly that late 90s, early 2000s era of horror movie soundtracks. That was when a lot of the studios were leaning in real heavy on not just the new metal, but heavy metal in general. Hardcore music was sort of getting picked up in places, even going so far as to like death and black metal in some of them, which is more your speed than mine.
Mm-hmm.
I prefer melody in mine. You're fine with or without it. But
I want my man. My music sounds like it's having a bad time. I'm having a great time.
But I feel like there are two amazing eras in horror movie soundtracks that we don't get anymore. And then there was a dry spell again in the early to mid 90s. But the 1980s, a good chunk of the 1980s, and the late 90s and early 2000s. And I say that I drag the 80s into this conversation because it was so random.
There was a lot of just throwing shit at the wall and seeing
And
what
I think
stuck.
That's why I feel like it was such a great time for horror soundtracks or music inspired by horror movies, because a lot of it was really weird.
Yeah.
You got the Fat Boys for, I think it was Nightmare 4 or 5. It was a rap group.
Which was still amazing, but it was such a weird,
it's so
like,
random. It didn't, like, the 80s had this real magical thing where the music picked for their end credits in a horror movie did not fit the tone of the movie.
I actually wrote down some of my favorite little singles, because the stuff that we're
from the 80s?
Yeah, the stuff that we're going to talk about, I noticed that for that late 90s into the 2000s, that was kind of like the era of the compilation.
Yeah.
And with the 80s, it was like, whenever I was like looking through the soundtracks for the 80s, it was the actual score of the movie, and then they had like maybe one or two singles.
Yes.
That was dealt towards whatever the movie is. So I actually wrote down my favorites that kind of stuck out.
Really? From the 1980s?
Yes.
That's cool. Because there was just some of them that were so random. When we did Pet Sematary a few weeks ago, the Ramones at the end of that one totally missed the tone of the movie.
So we'll start off with that one. That's actually one of my favorites. One, because I'm just a Ramones guy, and it's fucking Pet Sematary,
but
so...
also, Stephen King loved... He liked punk music, so whenever he could...
I
guess he's a big Anthrax fan, too. He likes thrash metal.
But that was one thing where... The Pet Sematary one, I liked, but yes, it didn't fit the tone of the movie at all. But none of those movies in the 80s ever fit the tone of whatever
it
was.
You would get to an end of the movie, and you'd either be... your personal mood would either be bogged down because of the gore, because of the tension, because some of them were legitimately scary. Like, and then all of a sudden, you'd have some sort of, like, bounce to the music in the closing credits, and it was like, wait a second.
So let's start off with this one. This group was actually labeled 213, and they did the song Nightmare for Nightmare on Elm Street 1.
Oh, yes.
This is a nightmare!
Yes. Oh, and
it's
then they got...
a dream.
It cracks me up, because in Nightmare 3, they got Dawkins.
Yes.
Which was actually a huge get at the time.
And that was my next one, was Dream Warriors. But still, how epic is Dream Warriors? Because it does have that,
We're the Dream Warriors!
Like, you can't. Yes. You can't help. But it, and even
it
with
touch
the,
of, it had a touch of that battle metal vibe.
Yes, and, but with the kids actually kind of going to battle, it did actually have like that exact feel that you needed to have. But it was just a weird mashing where the tone of it still didn't feel right. Like, you're taking it from the side of the kids. So yeah, you had 2, 1, 3, and then you had Dawkin for Nightmare 3. One of my other absolute favorites is the Dickies for the Killer Clowns in Outer Space theme song. It is so fucking good. It's like, it makes me smile every single time because it's a whole song about killer clowns from outer space, and
somehow they made that work.
I love it. It's absolutely love.
That's great.
Another one that was, as you mentioned, in Silver Bullet, you had I believe it's Chataway and Rob Maths. They did the song Joyride. The song, the score for Joyride was also written by, well, the whole score for the movie was written by these two guys, but the song Joyride, you could, anytime like you saw Corey Haim on his Silver Bullet, you could hear that music and, you know, going in the background. So at the end credits, they actually added lyrics, and it does not fit whatsoever. There was a reverend werewolf going out trying to murder, like, he was murdering people in the town, and trying to murder a kid. Yeah. And then at the end, it's like, I'm going to take you on a joyride. And it's just like, where did we go, Eddie Money? Come on. Like, it did not fit.
No, it didn't.
It did not make theme.
That's why I said, like, the 80s horror songs for their soundtracks, they were beautiful because it was like, who the fuck was like, yep, do that? Because those execs were just like, what's popular at the time? So is it hip-hop? Is it glam metal? Is it, is there like a radio rock thing where it was like the Eddie Money thing? Like, what's like, popular at the time? And then we'll just slap it on our movie.
It literally has no sense as to what needs to be mashed up. It's just what is, like you said, what is popular. All right,
it is
so
0% relevant.
And there's a ton of other like 80s stuff. This is like the things that I could like think back into my head. I mean, one of my favorite films is American Werewolf in London, and Blue Moon is on there. That fits.
Actually, the whole soundtrack for American Werewolf in London is, there's like 3 or 4 different versions of Blue Moon on there, but there was also like Bad Moon Rising, and they were all these sort of moon themes, was in the title of all of them.
It's like, so it works. Thanks, John Landis.
But not only that, they worked tonally too.
Yes.
So that worked out really well.
And I think that at the end of the remake for Nightmare on Elm Street, they actually used Mr. Sandman. So Mr. Sandman.
No, that wasn't Nightmare.
In the remake they did that.
No. It was
I guarantee you it is.
It was Rob Zombie in Halloween.
No, he did that too, but in
I
guarantee it to you, I will show it to
I'll
you after this. I will show it to you right after
I will
this.
Look it up now.
Yeah.
Whilst you are speaking.
But just type in Nightmare on Elm Street and end credits and it'll pop right up. So while she's, you know, being over there wrong, I'm gonna go ahead and go with my top two favorite 80s is Alice Cooper did the song for Friday the 13th, Jason Lives, and it was called He's Back, The Man in the Mask, and it is a fun, you know, again, I like Alice Cooper, but it was just a really fun song for him to just be talking about Jason Voorhees. And then the last one is the almighty Motorhead doing Hellraiser for Hellraiser Part 3.
Yeah.
That song is just such a good fucking jam. But what's great is I guess they actually wrote it for Ozzy. And they decided to, I guess, almost redo it themselves. Mm-hmm. And then for this movie, I guess they got asked if they wanted to do something, and there it is. But yeah, so Hellraiser for Motorhead, like, come on, it's the almighty Lemmy. Like,
yeah, no,
because Lemmy is Gad.
Trick question. Yeah. So the 80s were a spectacular time for just the randomness of it all. But then you get into the late 90s and early 2000s, which is, I know it's my favorite because that was my sort of coming of age time. I was in high school and like I was just starting to kind of get into metal. And then it wasn't until I graduated high school and I had like the boyfriend I was dating after that, who was a metalhead, who started getting me into it more. However, we watched a lot of horror movies together. And I just remember a lot of the soundtracks being amazing. So, so good. And there was rarely a time where there would be a bad song on them. Like, there was not, there was never really, I don't recall any of the ones that I liked or owned that had a dud.
No, and that was something with those compilations. Like, they really made sure that they put them together as, you know, best they could to really make a sell on them. And also, with those compilations, you know, when you get a hodgepodge of those groups.
And it wasn't, oh, by the way, I'm not sitting here in my wrongness being wrong. You're sitting in your wrongness being wrong. Because in the 2010 remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, the end credit song is All I Have to Do Is Dream by the Everly Brothers. Dreams.
Son
dreams,
of a bitch.
Dreams, dreams.
I knew it had dreams in it.
Yeah, but you might want to take your smug down a notch, sir.
All right, smugness is reduced. Just it's dropped down to about a 5.
Yeah. I mean, it goes to 11, but we're going to pull it back a little.
Anyways. But, so, with all those, I mean, I remember going into Best Buy when I didn't have a, you know, a bill to pay. I would just use all my hard-earned cash on, I would just go and find random albums.
Yeah, you just mentioned that.
Yeah, and so I would just go through and pick up stuff, but I would always go through the compilation album, like, section, and I would just look at the backs and just see, like, just kind of look through and see if there's a name on there that I wasn't familiar with or just seemed cool, and I would just go and find them in the section and buy their album. And I would do that almost every weekend.
I did the opposite. I would look for something that I recognized, and then I would go from there. Mm. So, like, it would have to have been something I was already familiar with.
Yeah.
And then I would go, or it would be a couple versions of that, and then I'd go, okay, oh, this is worth a listen.
So I wrote down, and these are some of my kind of go-to compilation.
You took two of the ones I was thinking
of.
Yes,
and we have a lot of the same. Two albums that are pretty big on my list that are not horror movies is Spawn and The Matrix. They have phenomenal soundtracks. And
I just recently rediscovered a non-horror movie soundtrack that I totally forgot about. Was the, weirdly enough, the Not Another Teen Movie soundtrack is amazing. Oh. It's so, so good.
The first album that I ever bought myself when I was a kid. Like, I mowed my dad's yard, got some money. First album I ever purchased myself was the Good Burger soundtrack. And it is a fucking banger.
It's got George Clinton
and The Police. I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. I was like, I was so happy. I would blast that thing in my little CD player, like, on the way to my hockey games. I love that thing. And then I ended up finding Korn and
you moved on
Pantera. Yeah, I was like, oh, no. It's still there. I have my Good Burger soundtrack. It's there. I've expanded my horizons, so.
Beyond P-Funk.
Oh, no, P-Funk is still there. He's still a resident.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. You've expanded outward from P-Funk.
It's there. But, but as I'm doing my little research for these albums that you and me both like, I've actually noticed that this trend.
There's a lot of overlap happening.
A ton of overlap. However, they are using a lot of the same bands for all these are different movies, but they're using different songs from them.
Yeah.
And that, I think, kind of changes that vibe or tone. For instance, one album that I know that you and me both love is the Resident Evil Apocalypse, which...
The Resident Evil movie franchise as a whole, their soundtracks are solid to amazing. Say what you will about the movies. They're varying, yeah. You know, your mileage may vary. But the soundtracks are so, so
good. And what's hilarious is that they actually stopped doing the Resident Evil soundtracks on number 4. So 1, 2, and 3 have their own compilation soundtracks. And what's great is that, so I put down Apocalypse as my favorite out of those three.
Yeah.
But they use all the same, like, if you look back at Resident Evil 1, I think there's maybe like one or two songs.
Yeah.
Like the first song on Resident Evil 1 is Slipknot. It's My Plague. And so on Apocalypse, it's
Vermillion.
It's Vermillion. So it's
a Vermillion remix.
Yeah. Oh, they're all remixes. Like the whole.
Yeah. I'm just saying it's not the one you find in Subliminal Verses.
No, but I was like, that was interesting. So I mean, like things like there. Yeah, that they have.
Actually, the Resident Evil Apocalypse soundtrack, Killswitch's version of End of Heartache. Actually, that's the song that got them nominated for a Grammy the following year.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot can come of having these compilations. I know on Justice podcast, he talks about it a lot where he misses being able to do that because a lot of up and coming bands can be featured on these compilation discs for movies, or they can be featured in a movie. And actually a lot of them, come to think of it, like a lot of the songs you find on these soundtracks aren't actually in the movie anywhere, but they fit the vibe.
Yeah. And Josta is from the band Hatebreed, who is on every single one of these albums that I have.
It's true.
Which is, and that's, I mean, they're one of my favorite bands.
Talk about overlap.
Of all time. I know.
So much overlap.
But that's where I was looking at it, and I'm like, I mean, all these albums are our favorites, but they all have a similar, like, all these similar bands, and I was
they
like,
all came out, but the thing is looking at the dates on those, they all came out within that same like 5-year span.
For instance, like you know, with one of our other albums is Freddy vs. Jason. So Freddy vs. Jason is probably one of our top compilation albums,
and we talked about it a little bit during the Freddy vs. Jason episode a couple months ago.
Go take a listen to it; it's fantastic,
right?
But the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2003 album is very, very similar. I mean, like I wrote down the bands. We have Pantera, Hatebreed, Soil, Static X, Mushroom Head, Shadows Fall, Meshuggah, Fear Factory, Morbid Angel, Index Case, Lamb of God, Finger 11, and Sworn Enemy. I think maybe about 5 of those bands are not on this Freddy vs. Jason, which is... like,
they were all Platinum Dunes. I'm just kidding. Like, I think they were all the same studio.
Yeah. I think a lot of it is Roadrunner. So, I mean, I don't know if
Roadrunner had become the... Before Roadrunner went tits up a handful of years ago, they were the go-to for a lot of this stuff. Them and Wind Up.
Yeah.
Wind Up did a lot of the Marvel movies.
Yeah. And I know, like, with Freddy vs. Jason, they are all, like, Roadrunner bands. Like, you know, El Nino, Killswitch, Spineshank. I love Spineshank. Mushroom Head, Hatebreed, Slipknot, Chimera, you know, From Autumn to Ashes, Seven Dust, Rammstein, Murder Dolls, Stone Sour, Seether, Devil Driver. I mean, so it's like you're only like, I think this is actually a bigger album than what Texas Chainsaw was, but the vibes that every song that they had on there, even though that they were different, it, as you said, still held for what that album, like that intensity of what that album was.
You got in the Freddy vs. Jason movie, we only really heard the El Nino song, the
which is so good.
How Can I Live was sort of the theme song for that whole movie, because you got it in the opening credits a bit, you got it at the end credits a bit, and or you got the full version of it at the end credits. But like when the movie opens and you're getting to the end of those opening credits, you got the tribal drums and you've got that whole thing. You just don't get into the lyrical part of it.
Yeah.
It's like the opening of the song. Yeah. So weirdly, that sort of became the theme song of the movie, and the music video is 100% tied back to the movie.
Yeah. One other movie that
our music videos were a thing.
Well, yeah, and that was really fun too. And now there are, I've actually found that instead of bands actually getting like linked up to a movie, they're doing movie themes for their own songs. Like Ice Nine Kills constantly does the horror movie themes. I think they just did an It song, which is it's fucking fantastic. One of my favorite bands of all time is He Is Legend. They actually do a song, and I think towards like the end portion of it, they actually tie in the whole line from The Shining, where it's just like, you've had your whole fucking life to think things over, but the intensity that the artists get, I was like, so that I think is really cool. There's another band, Showbread. It was a kind of like a screamo, pop, you know, punk band, and they actually have a song all about Evil Dead and Ash, and it's Dead by Dawn. And it's like, so stuff like that.
Is that kind of like when Bury Your Dead did that whole album of Tom Cruise movie?
Yeah,
same idea.
Pretty much. I mean, like, so I mean, it's nice that bands are doing that and finding ways to kind of incorporate it, since, you know, movie
since corporations. Yeah, they've kind of gone the way of the dinosaur a little bit, unless you're like AC/DC doing a Marvel movie.
Now, another movie that I was actually really happy with, and it's a very short album, is Strangeland with Dee Snider. So Dee Snider wrote it, starred in it, was fucking fantastic, and it's goddamn Dee Snider. But his album had, it was Twisted Sister, Seven Dust, Megadeth, Pantera, Anthrax, who else we got in here? Cold Chamber, Marilyn Manson, Godhead. He also had Eminem and Kid Rock that was on the same track together.
Was this, like, was right, Strangeland came out, because it was 98, so this is right before Eminem blew up.
Yeah.
And so that was really, and it was right about the time Devil Without a Cause came out.
Yeah.
So it was right about the time, like, Kid Rock had released, like, Ba Ba Da Ba, and then it was right on the cusp of Eminem breaking out.
And I didn't know, I had to go back and listen to that song, because I never knew that that was a thing. I like old school Kid Rock. Like, his first album, that first mainstream album, fucking great. Like, I loved it. Eminem, same thing, always loved him. So I was like, oh, I gotta listen to that. Another mashup that I was not aware of until I started doing this research was on the Resident Evil 1 soundtrack. There is a song with Method Man, and it's a remix from The Prodigy, which is my favorite goddamn group of all time. Like, number one on my list. I never knew it was a thing, and I was like, I love me some Wu-Tang Clan and Method Man, so I had to, like, I cranked that thing, like, four or five times in a row. Like, that
thing just kept skipping back.
I was just like, oh my god, this is so good. So that was a nice little thing there. But I think my favorite compilation album is Queen of the Damned. And
it was Jonathan Davis produced.
Yes, and that's the only reason was that it was a compilation, but it was all original music. So, like, Jonathan Davis, if you're not familiar with the movie, he actually went and wrote every single song that was used for the group, the vampire group, Vampire Lestat, and his band. What was interesting was that Jonathan Davis actually recorded all of the songs himself. So there's that.
That's what producers do it. They record them initially, like a sort of demo rough track version of it.
No. He recorded them for the movie. The Vampire Lestat is Jonathan Davis.
Yes. Yeah, I knew that.
So, I actually, years ago, when Napster was a thing, yes, I used it.
Everybody used it.
LimeWire, yeah.
Kazaa.
You name it. But I actually found all of those recordings. So I had both albums. I had album one with everyone that was on the compilation, and then all of Jonathan Davis's.
So you had the movie version, then you had the re-recorded versions for the actual disc.
You bet.
Yeah, that one was interesting. That one was pretty much pure nu metal.
Oh, very much so. I mean, you had like Jonathan Davis wrote everything, but you had Wayne Static, David Draiman from Disturbed, and Disturbed actually did a song on the album too. Chester Bennington.
Chester
Bennington. I always fucking I had a bubble in my throat. Get off my ass. You already won the Nightmare on Elm Street thing. Let me have this one. I had a bubble in my throat. It happens. I'm a man. So, but then you have Deftones, and you had that Marian Manson. Is that how you say it?
Marian Manson.
Okay. And then you had Papa Roach. Take it or leave it. And then Jay Gordon from Orgy. But it's like each person fit the song perfectly for what was needed. Like the Chester song is fucking beautiful. Like it's great and sad that he's gone, but it's just
as you were listing off some of those names, there's a few of them on there that are no longer with us. No. So that's really sad. I kind of have the sads now.
Yeah. Like Wayne Static is like I had the pleasure of actually being able to meet him and see his hair standing at full erection.
He was already a pretty tall man.
Yeah, and it's like, oh my god, I'm a short, you know, stumpy little kid, so it's like
Corey Taylor ended up being your height and you were okay with that.
Yeah. I mean it was nice. It was nice being able to look eye to eye to him and just say, I like you, you're fun. And then him telling us stories about him drinking in the morning and then calling his grandmother and having him, you know, her scream at him for drinking and Jack in the morning.
I mean, so, to be fair, that's a good reason to get yelled at somebody.
And that was right around when Stone Sour was, like, really kind of blowing up.
Oh, right after Bother came out?
Yeah. So.
So, I'd have to say, like, all the ones you listed, I adore, but my all-time favorite horror movie soundtrack is a bit of an outlier because it wasn't in this time frame. It was in the dead zone. It was in the horror movie dead zone of the early to mid-90s. It was the Crow soundtrack.
That's a good one.
There was so much good stuff in there, and it was weird because it was the movie was so grungy and dirty, and just it was coming at the tail end of the grunge era, where grunge was just kind of starting to peter out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I used to have a physical copy of the Crow soundtrack at one point or another, but years ago we got rid of all of our discs, so it's long gone. Which makes me really sad because I had it on an old iPod that is also long gone. So there was no recovery for that. And it's one of those that's going to be really difficult to piece back together because songs like Burn don't exist anywhere else.
I mean, I could probably find a way to kind of rip it off of YouTube if it's possibly on there. I'm pretty sure it's on there, but
pretty much the only way I'm going to be able to listen to it right now is if I want to watch the movie.
But other than that, I mean, it's still a really good one. Didn't Iggy Pop do the second Crow soundtrack?
Yeah, City of Angels. Iggy Pop was in the movie.
I know it was, but that's what I was saying. I thought he.
But the Crow City of Angels was another one that was really good because that was 95 or 96. And that was at the real early beginning stages of nu metal. So we got, like, Deftones and stuff in there, which was really good. Also, they had a Blink and You Miss It role in the movie.
Yeah, I kind of miss those little things. Like, as a metalhead going into these different movies, seeing, like, one of my favorite bands, you know, pop up was always cool. And it was funny, like, when you and me first started getting together, we were watching City of Angels, and like you were like, "Oh yeah, it's Deftones." I was like, "When? Like the 2 seconds that they were there? Like there? It was like this little like street concert, and they're just you can see
was
Chino."
It was getting towards the climax of the movie, and it was back when Chino was still doing the weird bleach blonde dread thing. So his hair was kind of long, and it was that weird yellow. Clearly, he had black hair. He tried to make blonde.
Now, one movie that I was so pumped about was, did you ever see the movie Rollerball?
Yes. I mean, I'm aware of it. I don't remember if I've seen it or not.
Rollerball featured Slipknot. And I lost my shit as a Slipknot fan. Like, the movie I thought was, okay, I think Paul Heyman's in it as well. Because he's Rollerball! It's fun. Like,
that era was a special time, yeah. Huh?
But another really cool movie that I that's not a horror related whatsoever. And, I mean, you and me are both wrestling fans, but Ready to Rumble with David Arquette, which strangely enough, he is now
he's a wrestler.
He is now rumbling.
He He's not just a wrestler. He actually wrestles in hardcore matches. Yeah, he gets light bulbs smashed over him on the ring.
Yeah. But that movie had a really cool soundtrack. And that was actually, I think, the first time I ever heard Papa Roach, Last Resort. Like, that was the first movie that it was featured on.
I heard it on TRL.
Yeah. So, but it was still really fun. And a lot of those 90s, like, comedies and things like that, I think, had a little bit more of the compilation. But they went the more pop punk. Sum 41, Blink 182.
Getting into, they all had numbers in their names.
Yeah.
Yeah, because,
Green Day 45.
Right. Not horror related, but Good Charlotte was in Not Another Teen Movie. They were the band playing during the prom.
Yep.
So that stuff was always super fun. Horror movies in general don't, unless it was like Saw 115 when Chester Bennington got glued to the car seat.
Yeah. Also, I believe it's Saw, what's the VI? Is that
six?
Saw 6 soundtrack is fucking phenomenal. That was one of my honorable mentions. So good, and it actually went down the route. Like, so on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, they had Morbid Angel, which is a death metal, black metal band. More death, but on the Saw album, they actually had a Suicide Silence. When Mitch, their former lead vocalist, was on there, and I was just like, oh my god, like, I could just think of, like, having some non-death metal person pick up this album, and the whole album is, like, you're kind of, like, new metal heavy. It's a heavier album, but all of a sudden you, boom, get slapped in the face with Suicide Silence, and you're like, holy shit! And it's one of their, like, heavy songs.
Yeah,
so
I was, it's like, real ugly, huh?
Yeah, it's right up my alley. I was like...
It was having a bad time.
I was having a good time. So it's, but yeah, that was a really good album.
I think it's worth mentioning it, which is why I wanted to do this little mini pod today. I think it's worth mentioning, and it's also worth re-exploring, because it's something that's not done so much anymore, unless it's sort of like a teen movie, kind of like a Twilight type thing. Those sort of soundtracks, they just don't exist. I wonder, it might be in part due to the fact that there's not a lot of major, like, a lot of bands now are on indies, mini majors, or just producing music themselves, rather than having to deal with the major label bullshit. But I would encourage everybody who's listening to us right now to go and start digging around and maybe drop in on your local, like, used record store kind of thing. See what you can find, or screw around on the internet. I'm sure you can still torrent something. Even if it's not fully available. I mean, I'm going to probably try Spotify for the Crow soundtrack. I might have better luck there, but who knows?
Yeah, I know with, like, one thing that I've come to find is, like, you can, there are, like, YouTube to MP3 rippers. Like, there are free websites. I mean,
it's not the most legal of routes, so we're not endorsing it by any means, but it is an option available. Yes.
It's like, there's one song, actually it's a whole album, but I only got the one song. Keith Flint from The Prodigy, he actually put out a solo album, and it never actually made it to the States.
No.
I had it years and years ago.
Didn't you find it randomly?
Yeah.
Like a flea market or something?
Yeah, and it ended up getting damaged. So I have yet to find it again, but I can't even think of the name anymore off the top of my head. But it was, the song was called Something to Aim For. And, like, I had to do that where I found it on YouTube, ripped it, and I was like, now I got all my Apple Music just to have it. So.
I would very much encourage anybody to go back and get into some of those movies in this time period, whether you're into heavy metal or not, because there's so much fun stuff on there. If you can find the soundtracks, get the soundtracks. They are so much fun. I personally didn't give a shit about Cradle of Filth until I heard Nymphetamine.
Oh my god, they're my jam.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I was so happy when I heard it, Nymphetamine on there.
I heard Nymphetamine and I was like, okay, I think I'm, because it was pretty. And I was like, oh.
And then all of a sudden, yeah, yes.
I still can only do like one or two songs at a time, dude. Don't get excited.
Oh, I love it.
The surprise and the getting to experience something new is the best part of the soundtrack experience. Not scores. You don't want this unless you're really instrumental type things. It's fine. But the proper soundtracks are a really fun experience, and you can get a lot more out of the movie that way than just watching it.
And I always love it too when the movie production houses actually use bands for certain things. Like one group that I kind of lost my shit over because I was so pumped about was we were watching the new Power Rangers movie. And like our son is just going nuts over Power Rangers, and I mean
he's
used to go back in the way. And so the Yellow Ranger, she's got her headphones on and she's listening to a band, and someone takes her headphones out and you could hear the music playing, and I'm like, I know that. It's like it's a death metal band. I was like, where is it? And it was Revocation. And I was like, they put Revocation in a fucking Power Rangers movie? This is the great, like, and you're like, just chill, slow it down. Just calm down, go get a slushy, just relax. Like, it's not that big of a deal. I'm like, it's a big deal.
You're way up here, sir. You need to be down here somewhere. It's
big, big deal. Because
especially because it was a death metal band in a kids movie.
Exactly. I was like, that. And the Yellow Ranger is not my favorite Power Ranger because she's listening to death metal.
Also, Becky G, who played the Yellow Ranger, is a Hispanic pop singer. But, you know, forget about that. So go. Venture forth. Find fun things. I hope you enjoyed our little trip down memory lane to Horror Soundtrackville.
Yeah.
And stick around every Tuesday and get us on your favorite podcatcher, where we will drop at midnight every single week.
And we highly recommend, is if you we have missed anything, or if you have your own favorite, you know, 80s horror song, or, you know, anything from the 2000s that we just missed, let us know. Like, give us ring a ding ding.
This would make an excellent discussion. So super fun discussion topics. Find us on Facebook at Creepin' It Real, as well as on Instagram, same name, R-E-E-L, as in movie reel. If you like our podcast, go buy our merch. We're at redbubble.com, with our Creepin' It Real store. And then, if you have any ideas for movies or other topics, you can send us an email at, creepinitreal.cm@gmail.com, or just slide on into our DMs on Instagram or Facebook. And
my phone's pretty much attached to me, so I'm pretty much going to answer you right away. But and I like to chat, so
Craig's a talker. He's real friendly, like.
I'm a gibby gab. I like to jibba jab with the best of them.
So catch us every Tuesday on your favorite podcatcher, and until next week, I've been Meg.
I've been Lunchbox,
and we'll catch you then.